Well, I had always written songs from a very young age. My mother got me my first guitar when I was 10. I didn't know how to play it or even put it in tune. So the first thing I did with it was invent a song, of course. And so I'd always written songs, played in bands, did different things, but mostly I was farming.
Jeff Coral grew up on a dairy farm in Pennsylvania. And this farm has been passed down from father to son for four generations. However, Jeff's family farm, like many farms across the country, faced financial hardships. And in 2022, his farm was one of the thousands across the country that shuttered operations.
This is a very difficult time for small farmers in our country. Very difficult to make the numbers work. So that's what happened to us. We just faced economic factors beyond our control that we couldn't overcome. So in the spring of 2022, I made the very difficult and painful decision to shut down the farm, which meant having to sell our cows. And of all the aspects of farming, the thing that I loved most was my cows and the relationship with my cows. And I often say that you're talking to a guy who has had more in-depth, meaningful conversations with cows than he's ever had with most human beings. So when it came time to say goodbye to them, that was the single hardest thing I ever faced in my life. And in the aftermath of that, I was very heartbroken, sank into a depression, and in the midst of that heartache and pain, I turned to that old friend for comfort and relief, my guitar, and through tears, I just poured my heart out into writing this song called Empty Barn.
And I can get used to not needing to bale hay. And I can get used to a job off the farm. But I will never get used to this empty barn.
So I really only wrote the song in an effort to get all those pent-up emotions out and to try to feel better. If left to my own devices, that's probably as far as it would have gone. But I played it for a friend, and she convinced me to put it up on my farm's Facebook page. So I just made a simple guitar vocal smartphone recording and was shocked to see that a couple of hours later, it had been downloaded like 300 times and then 1,000 times. It just kept going and going and going. What was even more remarkable than that was that along with all those downloads came the most wonderful comments of love, support, and encouragement. Mostly from complete strangers. And, I always say that writing Empty Barn was that therapeutic, cathartic experience, but getting all of those wonderful comments is really what started my healing journey.
You're listening to Arts, Work, Life, a podcast from the Association of Performing Arts Professionals. I'm Claire Caulfield. They say that laughter is the best medicine, but so is music, human connection, and genuine self-expression. In today's episode, we explore the healing power of the arts, not just for the creator, but also for entire communities. Act 1. Empty barns, not empty hearts. For Act 1, we return to Jeff Coral's story. After his song Empty Barn went viral, he signed a record deal and headed to Nashville to record his debut. But as he began to tour, he learned that sharing his story through song wasn't just impacting his life. Here's Jeff.
And it was within about 6 weeks of writing Empty Barn that I ended up in an iconic Nashville recording studio. So the producer asked me if there was anybody, when we were lining up the musicians to play, he asked me if there was anyone specifically. I was a fan of a gal named Tammy Rogers, who's kind of known as one of the best bluegrass fiddlers in the country. And so I just threw it out there, and he laughed and he said, okay, that's great. And he said, but you know, Tammy is one of the most in-demand studio musicians in Nashville. She tours extensively. You're never going to get her. And even if you could, you couldn't afford her. And I said, well, would you reach out to her and tell her what the song is about and what I'm trying to do? And he said, yeah, I can do that. But, you know, don't hold your breath. It was like 3 days later, I got a text from him all in caps. We got Tammy. And really, I don't want to put too much on this idea of fate, these things and how the stars lined up. But had Tammy not been on that session, we would probably have a totally different track. And Tammy's playing absolutely makes the song. Empty Barn. So once I had a professional recording of Empty Barn, I made it my mission to make a music video for the song. And so I asked on social media for farmers to send me pictures of their own dairy barn life and of their own dairy cows. It turned out I got pictures, hundreds of pictures from all over the country. And it's those pictures that really make the video so incredibly personal and powerful and poignant. And that really propelled things forward. From getting all the press and the virality of the video, I was able to put together a tour, and it just kind of evolved into being able to do it full-time and professionally. So one day in those early days, phone rings. It's a lady identifies herself as an administrator at a major hospital chain. She said, we would like you to come speak to our staff for our Mental Health Awareness Day. And this is honestly what I said to her, 100% truthfully. I said to her, I'm sorry, you have the wrong person. I'm not a speaker and I don't have anything to do with mental health. And the lady laughed and she said, I've been following your story from the beginning. Your story has everything to do with mental health. And so I thought about it and I agreed to do it under one condition. And that was that I could have my guitar with me. And it turned out that that talk was a really big hit. After I got over my nerves of doing it, I thought, hey, that's something that, you know, you really can relate to the audience and really get your message across. And so since then, I've developed this thing called a keynote concert where I tell my story and incorporate some of my songs that help tell the story. So there's this organization called the National Farmers Organization, and I was doing their annual conference. Well, while I was speaking, I noticed that there was a big guy, and this guy was in bib overalls and a baseball hat. And I noticed that he seemed like he was starting to get emotional when I was telling the story. And then once I started singing Empty Barn, he had tears, you know, in his eyes. And on one hand, it kind of really freaked me out because I like to make eye contact with the audience. And the fact that this big guy was, you know, starting to cry, it just, you know, I'll get emotional about it now talking about it. But it ended up that I had to kind of look away because it was affecting me, you know, to that extent. But at any rate, I finished the show, went out to my table. People were in line to meet me, and this guy was in line. Now, I'm 6'2", so I'm a pretty big guy. This guy was like towering over me. And when I reached out to shake his hand, he grabbed me in a bear hug and literally lifted me off the ground, like lifted my feet up off the ground and set me down and lifted me up off the ground again. And the second time he did, my hat flew off. And while he was doing that, he was saying to me, that's the greatest effing song ever. Except he was really saying the word. So anyway, about the time I thought I was going to pass out, he released me from the bear hug. And I looked at him and I said, wow, what's going on, man? He told me that he had grown up on a dairy farm. His family made the decision to go out of business and sell their cows when he was a senior in high school. And he had always dreamed and planned that he would take over the farm one day. So when his family decided to go out of business, he was just devastated. But at the time, he had to be the strong one in the family. So he, in fact, had to be involved with arranging the sale and doing all this stuff to get ready and not show them, you know, how much it was also affecting him. And he was now in his mid-30s, and he told me that he never told anyone, not his parents, not his wife, not any of his friends, how much that loss had meant to him. And he told me that that was the first day he had ever cried about his loss. I sold my cows and was heartbroken and depressed. To me, that was a Jeff Coral crisis. But sadly, there are just thousands upon thousands of farmers across our country going through the same type of pain from the loss of their operation, being a small or a mid-sized dairy farmer or a small or a mid-sized crop operation or poultry operation or whatever. It's all being taken over by large-scale mega corporate farm type things. And it's changed so fast. It's happened in the last, you know, roughly 20 to 30 years. It's given rise to this farmer mental health crisis. There's a statistic that says that farmers commit suicide at a rate 3 times higher than the average. Something like 92% of farmers report experiencing stress, anxiety, and depression on a weekly basis, because even farms that continue on, you know, profit margins are razor thin. If you're at the mercy of the weather, machinery breakdowns, any number of things, let alone the idea that, hey, you might knock your brains out to put this crop in and you might lose money on it. So this farmer mental health crisis has come about, and I learned about it through Empty Barn and through being asked to speak. And especially in my keynote concert, I really emphasize the mental health aspects of my story. And I really bare my soul to say, you know, this is what happened to me. And this is how I was able to move forward. But I will never get used to this empty barn. You know, guys that look like me were brought up to grin and bear it. You know, that's just all there is to it. They're going to keep that stuff inside. And if I can do anything, it's to say, look, here's what I did. I wrote a song. I played that song for someone as my cry for help. And you don't have to write a song, but by God, you can reach out to someone and say, hey, I'm going through something. I need to talk to you about it.
Jeff Coral is a singer-songwriter from Winburg, Pennsylvania. Act 2, Life Worth Living. In Season 2 of this podcast, we featured Sam Simon, a playwright who was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. Sam decided to write a one-man show about his experience with the physical, mental, and spiritual realities of the disease. When we last spoke with him, he had just finished his first performance of Dementia Man, An Existential Journey, at the APAP NYC conference. In the 2 years since then, Sam has performed the show over 60 times and continues to tour across the country. With an update, here's Sam.
We were pretty much full houses each time. Now that I perform the show 50 to 60 times, I do pretty well. It's still not memorized, but there are still moments where I lose awareness. My wife, Susan, is now my cognitive navigator, I call. And Susan can, she'll call out the page or the line number, or even say, to your left, Sam, if need be. And it's an hour-long show. It's solo. I have a very simple set. It's the background of an imagined trip to Switzerland, because there is a narrative of life with the disease, with Alzheimer's or so-called dementia is not worth living. And it imagines and it addresses, should I take that trip? Or how do I live a meaningful life, a life with this disease? And spoiler alert, it is that the life is indeed worth living. I got an email, and it was from a Mrs. Holland. She told me that she and her husband, a Dr. Holland, he said, we saw your show in July. My husband passed away last week. I'm pausing on purpose. Her husband passed away last week, and there was an attachment to her email. She said, my husband has drawn and created a self-portrait of him and his memory loss. And it is an incredibly beautiful work of art, deep green, a caricature of a human being himself, his eyes closed and his hand up against the side of his head. She said, I want to donate the drawing to you and for your work because it was so meaningful to him and us and seeing it had such an impact. And, you know, I'm humbled by the responses and reactions. I get gratitude often. One of the surprising things are people who immediately raise their hands. Some, usually the first person who says anything and says, oh, thank you, Sam. My husband, my father, my uncle had dementia. I always wondered what it might have felt like to them, him, her. I now think I might understand it just a little better. The word that describes my disease is dementia. I hate it. I am part of an advocacy movement to substitute that word with probably cognitive disability. So I think I'm going to end up renaming the play. This is a first, you heard it first here. So rather than calling it Dementia Man, maybe it'll be my existential journey, the Alzheimer's story. That won't be part of this using this terrible, terrible word. This work, this theatrical piece, is advocating for some radical change in what is going to become and is becoming an overwhelming force in American society. That's the aging of the baby boomers and the impact of that on their children. Two generations going through this in broken system. The power of theater. My doctors believe that my work and my expression have helped me continue to be healthy. There is a story to be told, and there are very few of us, if anyone right now, with the disease on stage telling this story. Theater can be entertainment, it can be joy, and there is joy in this story. It can imagine a different, help others imagine a different world for themselves and for their loved ones.
Sam Simon is a playwright, author, and actor in McLean, Virginia. Act 3, Home Run. Julian Silva moved from Colombia to Louisiana when he was 4 years old. There weren't many other Latinos where he lived, but music helped him stay connected to his heritage and Colombian culture. Julian spent hundreds of hours playing music, and after college, he started a band. They found success with great gigs, and they even recorded a few albums. But he felt like something was missing from this experience. So he pivoted and put his degree in psychology to work, and enrolled in a music therapy program at NYU.
With music therapy, it was interesting because a lot of the people that I worked with were not musical. They were not musicians. They were not people who sometimes ever even touched an instrument before. And it dawned on me, I realized that what I was listening to was their true expression through these instruments. They weren't worried about techniques. They weren't worried about scales on a piano. They were just playing what they felt. And a part of me was very jealous, because every time I approached an instrument, it was always the technique, the scale, how well I can play it. And I wanted to get back to a point where I just let it flow freely out of me. And music therapy has allowed me to do that, not only with myself, to work on myself with that, but also with other people. When I left New York City and moved to California, I got a job at a children's hospital. It's a largely Latino community. There are a lot of immigrant children at the hospital and families that don't speak English. And I've always had a passion for working with these patients. About 3 years ago, I was approached by a fellow coworker who asked me to help co-treat a new patient. All I knew about him was that at the time he was 17 years old, he had immigrated from Central America to the United States as an unaccompanied minor. He had no family in the United States or here in California. He was a farm worker. I knew that the diagnosis was acute flaccid myelitis, which is a rare condition that affects the spinal cord. So when you have this condition, it causes an extreme weakness in the arms and legs, sometimes causing paralysis. And when I introduced myself in Spanish, his smile got even bigger, because not only was I a Spanish-speaking music therapist, but I was also a male provider. And working at a children's hospital, believe it or not, there are not a lot of male providers. So sometimes we get cases where we have these teenage boys who are really reserved. They want to say things, but they don't feel comfortable. And sometimes if I walk into a room, they open up. And he starts telling me about using headphones during his physical therapy sessions, listening to reggaeton to help him through some of the painful procedures that he had to go through, especially with his condition. He's trying to move his muscles more, his arms and his legs. And sometimes that can cause some pain. And he would describe using reggaeton on his earphones to kind of drown out some of the pain and to kind of focus on just the beats of the music. We thought about songwriting, which is something else that we use, another intervention that we use with a lot of patients, where we introduce writing their own original songs to help them express how they're feeling. And sometimes it's easier to do that than actually just talking about our feelings. We shared a song called Home Run by an Argentinian artist called Paulo Alondra. And he shared that song, and that song was very powerful. And he explained to us how important that song was for him and how deeply it resonated with him, that we thought, wow, okay, what if we use the beats to this song and write your own lyrics to it? I said, yeah, I'd like to do that. He talked about his journey from Central America. He described it being a 45-day trip on the top of a train, and him describing losing friends on the journey, some of the things that he experienced physically and emotionally throughout that journey. And listening to stories like this, it's heavy. It's heavy. And sometimes you carry these things with you. As an immigrant to this country myself, not being able to speak the language, I couldn't imagine what he was feeling and what he was dealing with being alone in this country, working as much as he was at the time, and now facing this medical crisis by himself, not being able to understand what everybody was saying because he didn't speak English. I gotta remind you, he's just a 17-year-old boy who is very friendly, but cautious at the same time about trust. I remember when we first started writing lyrics, he would always ask me to hide his lyric sheet from the providers, so nobody would ever see it. He was very reserved about his story and about his feelings. So sometimes when we were doing songwriting or thinking about ideas, providers would walk into the room. He would immediately stop, change the subject, and go into something else. So it was important for us to support that, to make sure that we honor his privacy. The lyrics were about him leaving his family and how the medical condition that he was now facing had impacted him. And despite everything that he had been going through and has gone through, it was a song about hope. It was a song about being grateful, about not only the care that he was receiving, but the love that he was receiving from everybody. And then he, last line that he added to the song was, "Voy a volver a caminar," which means I'm going to walk again. Which was a very powerful way of ending that. Because again, this was a kid who was paralyzed at one moment, couldn't use his hands, his legs. He couldn't walk. And he was really motivated to do this. So that was powerful when he said, "Voy a volver a caminar." And at the end of the song, he wrote a whole verse in English to his providers, to his nurses, to his doctors, to his PTs, saying, "Thank you for helping me. Thank you for caring about me." After we finished the song, we recorded him on GarageBand singing. And after it was done, he listened to it and he said, "Is it okay if I share it?" And I said, "That's completely up to you. Who do you want to share it with?" And he said, "Maybe with my nurses and the people who take care of me." And we were able to share that on the day that he was being discharged. We had a little party for him and invited all the providers. Obviously, there was not a dry eye in the entire hospital after watching this video. It was so powerful. And for him, it was very empowering to be able to tell his story, tell it in a way that he wanted to tell his story. So when I saw the opportunity to join the podcast, I reached out to him and I asked if it was okay for me to share this story. And he was very excited that his story was going to be shared, that people were going to listen to it and hopefully find motivation to continue in their paths despite any obstacles. And really using this song and his experience as a way of motivating others. There's always those patients that kind of stay with us. He taught me a lot, not only about myself, but as a musician and as a music therapist. He taught me so much. It's important to tell his story because it shows how awesome and powerful music can be. To have an individual who has gone through such difficult physical trauma, emotional trauma, and to be able to use music to process those feelings is something that's amazing to me.
Julian Silva is a musical therapist based in Northern California. Thank you for listening. Arts, Work, Life is a production from APAP, the Association of Performing Arts Professionals. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the storytellers and not necessarily those of APAP. APAP is the national service organization for the performing arts presenting, booking, and touring industry. You can join APAP at apap365.org. The podcast team includes Grace Asuncion and Sam Myers, all led by Jenny Thomas, our fearless executive producer. And I'm Claire Caulfield, your host and producer. Our music today is from Blue Dot Sessions and Jeff Coral. This podcast would not be possible without the generous support of the Wallace Foundation, so thank you. Other thank yous to the APAP staff and board of directors, our storytellers today, and the hundreds of thousands of arts workers across the world. Your stories matter, and arts workers are essential. If you enjoyed this episode, which I really hope you did, please leave us a review, as it helps other people find the show.
Arts, Work, Life. That's real.